Reed, the founder of thebaggygreen.com. Good morning, mate.
Hi there, how you doing, mate?
Yeah, good, mate, good. Going into the series against the West Indies, were you expecting this much of a fight?
To be honest, when going into the series against the West Indies, you know, generally if you're a number one ranked team like Australia, you know, you're expected to win if you're playing them in our side. The West Indies are a team, though, that have an amazing ability to fight back if they sense they've got a chance of victory. So, you know, having said that, I didn't expect it to be a drawn series, but I did anticipate the fight from the Windies.
Yeah, well, I don't think anyone over here was either. We'll start with your batting. It was a very low-scoring series on the whole. Not a lot of runs coming for either team.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a look at the stats, I mean, I agree with you. Kieran Pollard was the only guy who averaged above 50. Having said that, though, if you saw the first three games, they were all played at St. Vincent, and it was a very slow, sluggish sort of track. And, I mean, you've got to keep in mind, in terms of Australia, you know, they just come off the Commonwealth Bank series, where obviously the wickets are very different. It was a very quick turnaround time to try and adapt. I think the only ground in Australia that might have a similarity to the St. Vincent wicket is maybe the Morara cricket ground up in Darwin. So maybe that was owed to it, difficulty to adapt from both teams. I'm not quite sure, but I mean, as you saw in the last two ODIs, when it was away from that ground, you know, the totals were substantially higher, especially Australia when, you know, the boys finally came right in the final ODI with the top order. You could see that sort of return of some kind of dominance with the batting come into effect. But all in all, yeah, it's a bit hard to pinpoint specifically what went wrong exactly.
Would you say you're quite happy with how the batsmen have performed in the series, considering you're lacking the experience of Michael Clarke?
Overall, the series, you'd have to say, was a little bit disappointing. And with the Australian supporters that I've been chatting with recently, that's the general consensus. Losing Michael Clarke was massive because, you know, if you happen to see the series, you would have seen, like, for the Windies, Sunil Narine and even Marlon Samuels were able to hassle the guys quite a bit with their spin bowling. And, you know, Clarke's one of the better guys in the game at handling spin bowling. So definitely there was a bit of a void with him out of the system. But, you know, George Bailey was able to step up on debut, and, you know, he went at a modest average of just under 35. You know, Michael Hussey's the best in the business at, you know, adapting to whatever conditions he's up against. So, yeah, I think the guys did all right. But also in the fourth ODI, it was a case of guys rather throwing away their wickets and making the Windies actually work for their wickets. But in the final ODI, you know, that kind of seemed to come right. So, yeah, the guys did all right, you know, but definitely they're way better than that, eh?
Yeah. How do you feel that Shane Watson did taking this first entire series as captain?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, it was sort of unexpected circumstances. We knew Michael Clarke was injured, but the circumstances Watson was put into captain was sort of unwanted circumstances. And, I mean, you know, he's a senior on the side. He's got leadership abilities. And, I mean, it's quite a big step up to replace Michael Clarke, who's, you know, had a really successful start to his time as Australian skipper. But I think Watto did all right. He would have learnt a lot. But, you know, he's quite an emotional guy, kind of wears his heart on his sleeve. He's very passionate about the game. He's a mighty competitive guy, which is what, you know, we all value in him. But I'm always one for a captain who's a bit calmer on the surface, can hide his emotions, you know, keep the opposition sort of guessing. Guys that come to mind, you know, Steve Waugh, Clive Lloyd, you know, Hansie Cronje, and even, you know, Stephen Fleming of New Zealand. You know, so that's the type of characteristic Clarke seems to have. But, you know, Watson was the guy for the job. But, he did the best he could, eh? All learning.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's look a little bit at the bowlers for Australia. I mean, Brett Lee's back seems to be bowling fantastically, and Hoffenhaus doesn't seem to be too out of place, considering he seemed to be gone after the Ashes series.
Yeah, Hoffenhaus in particular is an interesting case. You know, I've always believed a guy's not performing, you know, you keep supporting him, but obviously the selectors make the call. Hoffenhaus got dropped, went back to state level, overcame his issues of knee tendonitis, and was back to his best with Tasmania. And fair enough, he was getting wickets, he got his core back, he's performed. Funny enough, Brett Lee has actually come into quite a bit of public criticism, actually, given. I mean, he's going to be the first guy to cop it because he's a little bit on in years. You know, the ferocious 150, 160-kilometer Yorkers all of a sudden becoming, you know, very generous full tosses and, you know, bowling it back of the length. not as threatening, but, you know, when he has a good day, he's still a wow factor. I'd say the bowling was actually pretty hit and miss as well, just like the batting.
Now, you said that Brett Lee's been getting a little bit of stick from supporters over there. Have a lot of the older guys been getting that?
Generally, I mean, from what I've checked, I mean, I've got a bit of family over in Australia, and just looking on Twitter, Brett Lee was one guy in particular that was kind of brought up, mostly to do with the death bowling. There were quite a few issues when trying to find the right recipe for Watson to work with when, you know, trying to, those last, you know, 5 to 10 overs. And obviously Brett Lee, you know, he'd either start off brilliantly and then just, you know, fall away, or, you know, vice versa. But, you know, again, he is on in years, and there's young guys coming through the system, so the pressure is on him. He is chasing those 400 one-day international wickets. But, you know, it's just the nature of the game. When a guy gets older, you know, and you're a bowler, generally you're past your peak by, what is it, you know, late 30s. So to still keep going, he's done a hell of a good job. But, you know, it just seems that maybe people are looking for change, you know, high expectations. I don't know. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, well, considering how many pace bowlers you guys got coming out of the woodwork, you can't really blame the supporters for thinking that. But do you think he's still got enough to offer the game?
Perhaps. I mean, obviously, he stepped down from Test cricket to give himself the best chance of limited overs cricket. But it was pretty much a case of, you know, well, what's often happened in cricket, not just Australia, where a guy gets selected on his name, his reputation, because class doesn't go away, you know. And Brett Lee's one of those guys. He's done an amazing job for Australia. But, you know, if you look at the upcoming bowlers for Australia, you know, you've got Alistair McDermott. You know, he's the son of Craig McDermott, played a massive role in the Queensland Bulls Sheffield Shield final. There's Paddy Cummins, James Pattinson, both have played Test cricket for Australia. Ben Cutting, Faulkner, Coulter Nile, Mitchell Stark, Josh Hazlewood, you know, Jackson Burt. There's a whole lot of guys coming through the system. And that's bound to put pressure on a guy who is a senior in the side, but he's also kind of towards the end of his own innings, you know, with Hilfenhaus and Siddle and Ryan Harris very much in the mix in their late 20s, early 30s. So competition's good, but, you know, obviously for Brett Lee, it's going to be a case of just trying to find some consistency just to have a little more longevity, perhaps.
Yeah, exactly. Now to move on to your spinner, Xavier seems to have done all right in this series. He's done okay. But you don't nearly have as many spinners coming off the wings, putting pressure on them like you do with the seamers.
I'm bound to agree with you on that. I mean, one way of looking at it, a lot has changed since the post-Shane Warne, Stuart McGill days. I mean, Shane Warne's legacy was, I think, inevitably going to burden Australia's spin bowling. I mean, with the exception of, you just said, Xavier Doherty, Nathan Lyon and Michael Beer, I mean, there's been about 8 guys used. You know, and that was partially, you know, the old selection panel's sort of inconsistency, but the new selectors seem to understand the roles change. You know, it's no longer about game control, but rather about, or it's more about game control now rather than game defining. So, you know, your spinners like Xavier are used to in some ways control the game, not to be defining in the match, like, you know, getting 5 wicket hauls, you know, at least, you know, like at the rate that, you know, for example, Shane Warne was able to grab them. But I think perseverance is the key. You know, Xavier Doherty took 11 wickets. You know, he was the top wicket taker. He went an average of 22. You know, so by persevering with these guys, they can only get better. I mean, you look at Graham Swann of England. You look at Devendra Bishu of the West Indies. It's through perseverance those guys have gotten the confidence to know what their role is. So even though the guys come through the state system, you know, it's more fast bowlers coming through predominantly. You know, hopefully sticking with these guys, they'll learn their place. And all in all, I was quite happy with Xavier Doherty. You know, if you can work past the blues of getting smacked around by Kieran Pollard, well, you know, then that'll be good. It'll be a good step forward.
Well, everyone has to take a little bit from Kieran. He just hits the ball so far. What are you going to do about it?
Oh, that dude's amazing. Just raw power, hey?
Yeah, exactly. We got to face the West Indies next. Do you have any advice for what our guys should be doing? I mean, how do you tackle Kieran Pollard?
Again, I mean, I've seen a fair bit of Kieran Pollard. You know, besides, you know, I actually follow the West Indies cricket very closely, and so I've seen him play. You know, he's been with the South Australian Redbacks. He's also played in the IPL. He's one of those guys who you just bowl anything back of a length, anything full, he's going to take you down. I think against a new ball, pitcher, but Fuller, maybe he would struggle. He definitely catered to the situations of urgency. It brings out the best in him. It's hard to say because I'm no bowling expert, so tackling might just be a bit of a luck of the draw. But he's definitely an exciting guy to watch when he gets going. A pure entertainer. Huh?
Okay, going on with the West Indies cricket then, since you you follow that, what else have they got at the moment? Because against you, before they played you guys, they seemed to be kind of all over the place. Whereas now that they put it together, five really really good performances, and they had performances coming from everyone, not just one guy.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a look at their balance, the biggest problem West Indies cricket always faced was, you know, you've got a bunch of guys coming from different islands, different backgrounds in some ways. And, you know, now all of a sudden they're trying to play cricket together. You know, if you look at West Indian cricket history, it goes back to the days of Sir Frank Worrell, who really worked hard to try and bring that unity to the side. But having said that, if they can just perform collectively, I mean, they've got Darren Bravo, who didn't have a good series, but, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure you've heard of the Brian Lara comparisons already. I mean, even some of the stats guys have looked at where Lara was at in his stage of his career compared to Bravo. You know, he's a guy who's got immense talent. And although I don't want him to do well against Australia in the test, I kind of want to see the best of him too, because I believe he might be a guy in 5 years' time we talk about as, you know, we've got to get his wicket. But, I mean, you know, there's also Marlon Samuels, who's got a guy with immense talent. He's never really shown his best. There's the class of Shiv Narayan Chanderpaul, and we spoke very briefly about Sunil Nareen and Devendra Bishu. Darren Sammy was never the first choice as captain for the Windies, but look at how well he's done, you know. He's proving to be a monster with the bat in hand low down the order, and he's leading the team with a bit of pride, and maybe that's giving unity. And along with Sammy, you've got Fidel Edwards, Kemar Roach, Ravi Rampal, who's going to return from illness now. So I agree with you. They've all of a sudden just come out really showing that with a bit of confidence they can actually bring it to any side. But that collective performance is going to be the key. And I don't know how they're going to get there, because it's been an issue of Windies cricket for a while. But hopefully you guys can rise above them as well, you know, come that series.
Yeah, definitely. All right, just one more thing before I let you go. You mentioned Darren Sammy there, and you're right. I mean, on this side of the world, we didn't really expect him to be captain, let alone make the team. Because okay, I think when he was selected, I mean, I looked back at the last few series they had, and he was on the fringes, but he wasn't really there. So it was kind of an out-of-nowhere selection. But, I mean, boy, since that they gave him that responsibility, he stepped right up. Do you think he can lead this team in the test series coming up? And do you think he can step up?
I think he can. I mean, what you would have seen this series, I mean, I was thinking exactly the same way as you. That, you know, he was kind of a bit of a panic pick with all the issues with Chris Gayle and everything. But he stepped up, and, like, the Windies showed the series against us that if you give them a little bit of self-belief, this team seems to be able to say, we've got a chance here. So, you know, West Indies, I think they're going to be, you know, really up against it, against the Baggy Greens. I think it's going to be a whole different ball game. The Australian test side, I've got the utmost confidence to take the series at least 3-0, without a doubt. They can do a whitewash. But for Sammy, it's going to be maintaining that self-belief. And he seems to have that attitude. He definitely gained the respect of the supporters, and that's really important. So I hope he can do it for the West Indies, maintain that leadership for a while. But, yeah, to answer your question, I think he could definitely step up there.
All right. You just mentioned Chris Gayle there, and that there's been some reports that he's going to go speak to the board and some members of government and all kinds of things to possibly either retract the statement or apologise. Is there any further development on that?
All I heard was last time, I mean, an Australian supporter, you know, I was really upset that the guys couldn't have a dig at him. You know, Chris Gayle is always exciting. It's always exciting to get his wicket. But last time I heard, they were re-engaged in talks sometime last year. They were going to get back together and discuss things further. But politics is no mystery in West Indian cricket. So, I don't know, only time will tell, hey? So it's up to the Count Windies guys to step up. But hopefully not before they get over to you guys in New Zealand.
Definitely, mate. All right, Ian, thank you very much for your time this morning. We really appreciate it.
No, it's been my pleasure to be on the show, and thank you very much.